This podcast is supported by Hannover Messe, your meeting place for the industrial community.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of our Industrial AI podcast. My name is Robert Weber, and it's a pleasure to talk to
Peter Seeberg. Good morning, Robert. Good afternoon, good evening to all of you, and a happy new year to all of you and to you, Robert.
And a happy new year to you, Peter. I think we can still say that, yeah?
Yeah, I think we are. What is today? We have Monday today. We have the, what is it? The official day of the Three Kings.
Yes. It's a holiday in Germany.
Yep. Is it in Germany only, probably? We'll come to that later. I do want to talk about Europe and the rest of the world a little bit. So while the rest of the world is working, and you, Robert, and I are working, and I'm sure many other people as well.
We are starting the year with a little special on the topic of functional safety and AI. Mm. Niels Schassen, the CTO of SICK, will kick things off. I recorded the episode just before Christmas, but as you have heard at the beginning, Peter, we have a new podcast partner, and we would like to thank Hannover Messe for the collaboration. Thanks a lot, guys.
Very much looking forward to, are we going to be seeing each other at the end of the month in Frankfurt?
Exactly. We will see each other. And I have one more announcement, because we have a new team member. We welcome Antje to our team, who will be managing our events, taking responsibility for our social media activities and planning collaborations. Welcome to the Industrial AI podcast, Antje.
Welcome, Antje. Looking forward to working with you.
Yeah, welcome. So, Peter, let's talk about news and our topics in this year. Will this year be the year of agentic automation?
Maybe, but it will be the year of agents. Okay. You know why.
Yeah, there's this famous quote, right?
Yeah, because I don't like the agentic. Although, I'm not sure if he was the first person, Andrew, right? Andrew has been, we talked about it a couple of months back. And he gave a reason, I think, did he say that agents is such a general thing? Which I guess is true. We talked about that as well from the English language perspective, right? You know, I think English, American people talking English would always talk about an agent, a person, you know, a service person, right?
Travel agent. Yeah,
travel agent typically, which I think we, as an example, in German, not sure, but I assume maybe the same, French, Italian, Spanish, maybe that's the same. I think we're just going to be talking about agents and not about agentic. And yes, I do believe that in one line, if we say the year 24 was the year of large language models, then 25 will be the year of agents.
Okay.
Maybe to talk with Zagran Evans, do you recall? In the year 2525, man is still alive, if woman can survive, they may find. Now, there's another piece. It's very long. Don't be afraid. I'm not going to be singing more in 25. But they start with 25. We're only 2025, so that's still 500 years. And if they take until the year 5555, and that's where they say your arms hanging limp at your sides, your legs got nothing to do, some machines doing that for you. Now, I think that's not going to be another, how is that, another 3,200 years. I think we're very close to that. You know, we should talk about robotics as well, I think, today. Now, but as I said, yes. Maybe talk about a couple of general things happening. You know, first thing we're talking about, security, functional safety. Sorry, that's the big thing. But there are going to be two big topics, so we can talk about that. I think general productivity improvement is most certainly one that we're going to be seeing in the year, before we then maybe come to the agents and other topics at the end, or towards the end, I guess.
But there was this famous quote, right, from the Microsoft CEO, agents will replace all software, the Microsoft CEO. Yeah,
that is the big thing. I would almost say the bomb he threw in. I saw somewhere a headline just yesterday that Microsoft is investing $80 billion. I was going to look into that. I didn't read it. I'm not sure if you saw it, but I would have said this quote from Satya Nadella is the not 100 billion, it's the 100 trillion quote. If the the CEO of, can I say, the world's number one software company still?
I think so.
I mean, of course, together with the Magnificent Seven I saw somewhere yesterday, and I thought they were assuming to the other ones, to the Apple and the Amazon and the Googles and everybody else, including OpenAI. But if he is saying that agents will replace all software, oh, I was so impressed. But most of it, because I say from the horse's mouth, you know, from Satya, and he talks about more. Now he talks about the front end and the back end, and he's questioning, you know, do you need Excel, kind of. I don't hear him say throw Excel away, but he's saying like...
He won't tell you that yet.
Oh, no, but he is putting it in those words. It's amazing. And I've been saying... And then I come to the person who was the first one to see it. I've been saying now for some time that each of us are going to have our assistant, you know, call them, and we're not going to even call them agents, I believe. I mean, consumers, right? I'm not going to call them agentic, whatever. I hate that, but it doesn't matter. They are not going to call them agent. They're going to call it their assistant. Maybe they're even going to continue to call it their cell phone, which we in Germany, for whatever weird reason, we call it handy. Right, we call it our handy.
Yeah,
and I think we're still going to call it our handy. And if in France is they're calling it whatever they call it, I think it's going to stay like that. And this thing that we hold in our hands typically, and that's maybe going to change, but let's see. But it's going to take care of all our requests, you know, and it's going to also guide us through our lives proactively. So it's going to tell us to do things, you know. Peter, you know, I booked you the room in for Frankfurt, you know, because I saw that the request for hotel rooms was getting up quickly. So I booked the hotel in which you like to be, you know, as an example.
Yeah.
And then I put up a couple of examples, right? So until now, I take this thing, this cell phone, and I want to write you an email. And I open my email app and I write you the email. I'm going to say, in the future, I'm going to say, you know, just write an email to Robert saying XYZ. And that's what it's going to do. I'm going to navigate. I open my, in my case, Google Maps, I think 99% of the world.
But ever since you met this telecom guy, you have been talking about it.
And he is the first. Well, I didn't meet. Are you referring to Jerry Yu, the founder of Brain AI?
Yeah.
And Jerry, I hope to meet him at least very soon by phone for a podcast, because I believe that Jerry, and he's been around as Brain AI a couple of years. Now they are partnering with Deutsche Telekom, and it was already last year. When is the Barcelona Mobile World Congress, right? And that's going to take place again very soon. And they were together showing a cell phone where there is no apps on it. So I think he was one of the first, and he's got a wonderful video on his brain.ai website showing exactly that. And I'm a big believer. You know, I'm personally using my Google Pixel here. Pixel.
Yeah.
Have you heard of Pixel?
I've never heard about Pixel. There's a company in Germany with Pixel or something, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, we should talk to them.
Yeah, absolutely. They produce some podcasts, I think. Yeah.
Right. For those of you, that's the name of Robert's company.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's really amazing. So as we're in the middle of agents and in the combination of wit, and that is so interesting, you know, if Satya is saying that's happening, and then, of course, everybody's talking agents. And then, by the way, we had a quick chat just 2-3 days ago, just 5 minutes saying Happy New Year. And then I said, well, the only person, that's not true. One person, a good friend of us, Stefan Zurlak, he's been saying a month or two ago, you know, it's all hype. And if somebody talks agents, you know, I don't want to listen anymore. And then you and I said,
we should invite Stefan. Yeah.
Yeah, Stefan, we're going to invite you. So I did already invite Armin Hatzalic, I hope I say that correctly, Armin from Siemens, and I hope to do a recording this week with him on building agents that deliver real value. How exactly he wants to do that, we can talk a little bit about now. But then, Stefan, yes, I do want to hear from you as well. And also with Armin, I'm not going to only talk about, the positive side of the hype. Hype is always positive, negative. You know, it's always... needs to pass the trough of disillusionment, if I recall it correctly, right? But I'm sure agents will. And you, Stefan, I believe, do not believe in that. So we need to talk about that as well.
I think I would be particularly interested in the aspect how we can implement this on the shop floor, because we need to talk about new standards, et cetera, et cetera. So if anyone feels called to do so, please feel free to contact us, because we are the Industrial AI Podcast and you are now a little bit more focused on the consumer perspective, Peter. But coming back to the shop floor, then it's getting interesting, right?
Well, let's see. I mean, one thing that I shared is the approach that Anthropic has, right? And Anthropic has this, I think it was set up by Anthropic. And of course, very good point that you make. And when we look far away, it's always up to you, dear listener, to think, oh, what are the guys talking about? And how, what does that mean for me on the shop floor? And we do talk about the shop floor as well. But if we don't, it's, you know, you yourself think about, what does this mean for me? So MCP, Model Context Protocol by Anthropic, standardizes how applications provide context to LLMs. And they say yet another USB port for applications. Now, what does make me think that, in what direction? Or should I say, connecting AI models to tools and data sources? Now, when you talked about Siemens, you recall who I mean?
Rainer Brehm, yeah.
Was it Rainer Brehm? You talked about exactly that.
Yeah, we talked about the ServiceNow and the Siemens and Beckhoff and how to connect all these dots, yeah.
And what does that mean? What does it mean to the other podcast with the OPC UA? I mean, OPC UA is supposed to be the USB for industrial and / now extended AI connectivity, right? So yes, most certainly. That's one thing.
So is there a discussion at the OPC Foundation when it comes to agents? No, I'm not sure.
No, I'm not sure neither, but they will most certainly be following the same topic. What you and I know is what Stefan talked about, is that they did the extension towards artificial intelligence. They have a working group, right? So I believe that you're thinking of joining that, for example. And I can only assume that as part of that, which I thought, did Stefan say there was like more than 100 people, companies from the beginning? Yeah, most certainly. You know, if you're doing OPC UA or anything else, and of course you want to do artificial intelligence there as well.
But agents are becoming their topic when we now think about the next 1, 2, 3 years.
Most certainly. And as what, just to try to arrange my thoughts, and I said it maybe, or Anthropic in this quote-unquote said it so much, what does it really mean? So I'm going to be, it doesn't matter what I do. Is I'm sitting as a consumer, and I'm doing that more and more with my smartphone. I do it in this case with my Pixel, whatever is on there. There's Gemini, there's the, if I say now the A, okay, Google it, will react. And anybody can do that with their own, with their Apple, with whatever. You know, I don't care. Everybody's going to be doing the same thing. And I ask something or I give a request, or the example I just gave, it comes to me. So what is then happening? I am really convinced that it will, the first thing that is in between me and the solution is then a large language model, right?
Yep.
So it's all about making what in the past were 100 or 1,000 different apps on your cell phone, on your user interface, on the shop floor. That is no difference as far as I'm concerned. There were not 1,000 different apps on the UI on the shop floor. Typically, you will have one and you can choose what it is that you're doing at the very moment. But I think the idea is going to be the same, that then this whatever is called agent will have understood what it is that you want and is going to look for something. Now, yes, it's going to need some kind of way of communicating with all the information that is there in this defined or undefined world, you know, the world as is, you know, the complete internet and everything, or to say, no, you're only allowed to look within the boundaries, the logical boundaries of my factory, my shop floor, for example. And how that is going to work That's why I'm
convinced. And then the agent has to do something, right? So that's the next step, yeah.
Right, and it's going to do that by itself, so to say.
Oh, that's a safety topic, right? Hello, hello.
Most certainly, and that's why I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to I haven't listened yet to the recording you did today. That's just one example. It's the security and safety, most certainly. But that is, I say, it's only one way. It's going to do a quick, write a Python and access a database and do something. That's one way. Or, and I hear already everybody say that's nonsense, Peter, because why wouldn't it use all the apps that are available to me? And I can very, very well imagine. So when I say, or when Satya says, you know, then he should answer that, but I'm going to answer it for me. You can most certainly still use all the app functionality. I believe you're not necessarily, I believe, going to see the front end of the app. Right, that is the idea. So when I say, you know, look at the pressure level of XYZ, then I'm not going to see my UI, maybe question mark, that I'm used to. I'm just going to see at least the agent is going to go there, maybe use what the app is doing anyway, not doing everything new, and I'm going to give it back to me the way that I want it.
But it's more than a new interface, right? So from my point of view, it should be more.
That is what is happening, yeah. And that's why when Jerry was one of the first ones to say, we're not going to see all these apps, user interfaces. Why should I have 100 different interfaces? It's enough to have one interface, which is me as a human communicating with my environment. I believe that's what's really going to happen.
But we both know that industrial processes are more difficult, right? So we agree on that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Most certainly. And that's what I assume is going to be. Yeah, I don't want to look into the details of a discussion if Stefan wants. But
yeah.
I'm honest enough always. I'm the guy that can easily talk. I can say whatever I want. Everybody can say whatever they want. You know, I can look into the future and say this is going to happen. Now, Stefan is one of the guys, and many
he needs to deliver
of you. You know, guys and girls, men and women that need to produce it and make it. And that's, of course, always where the rubber hits the road and say, oh yeah, Peter, he's talking and talking. What's going to happen? And I need to build it. And my customers come to me and say,
Peter told me.
Yeah, Robert and Peter did this great interview. And they say, I don't need all these apps. So Stefan, what are you going to do? And then Stefan say, oh, Peter, stop saying these things. Because, of course, I'm not saying that this is happening tomorrow. Although I would almost, and this brings me now back maybe 20 years. I've said it before maybe, but when I was with Intel and nobody was going to Barcelona, I was then going there and see what we would be doing. So now I'm not going to go to, although almost very interesting going to Barcelona, a beautiful city, in February. I believe typically this Mobile World Congress is right.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going to be very close to seeing what they will be doing there, Brain AI, Deutsche Telekom, and if any other mobile companies are going to be moving that direction. But of course, in the end, it's you and I, we are very, very much interested in seeing what that's going to be doing to the user interface on the shop floor in the production area.
Absolutely. I will give a brief outlook on our year because I have no news for this episode. We are starting in 2 weeks with our industrial AI event in Frankfurt. More in the show notes. Tickets are still available. Then you can meet us again at the Hannover Messe. After that, we will be going to Siemens for the AI with Purpose Summit, I think in June or something.
Well, one sec. So yeah. Hannover Messe is, are we in March already or are we April?
Yeah, exactly. And we will have their conference format too. And then we will meet at Siemens. And then we will meet again at AI in the Alps in July in Zug am Arlberg. And you can already register. And then we will have a short summer break. And in October, we will meet for our second round of events. So AI in at where we are invited. And we will have, of course, a lot of episodes every Thursday. And we are always happy to receive inquiries about AI in the canteen. I'm really looking forward to this year. So what is your highlight this year, Peter?
Coming up. What is the highlight? All the things that you and I do.
Yeah,
sure. I'm not going to pick one of them out, I believe. I love getting up Monday morning. You and I typically do that every second week, preparing my brain for whatever is coming. I love doing that together with you. I love the feedback. I love it when then on the Thursday in the morning, I typically spend a bit of time, you know, telling people on the specific topic that we have, you know, making them aware and getting your feedback, dear listener. That's maybe, as I'm now talking, that's so wonderful. You come back to me, to Robert, and you say how impressed you are with what we do. So that is, of course, that's, of course, very, very nice. And what I'm most looking forward to is, I think, what we've just been talking about. Yeah, I do want to, maybe I'm going to be one of the first buyers of this. And if it's Deutsche Telekom, it should be Deutsche Telekom. I don't care, as long as I hope it's going to be, you know, like with, what is it, the operating system, the Google operating system,
Android.
Yeah, Android, thanks. And maybe I'm going to be one of the first to be using that. I'm really looking forward to, and then really looking forward to what that means. And as you said, it's going to, of course, it's going to probably take a little bit more time, but that's always the idea of what we do, right? We talk about it. And then you, dear listener, you think, oh, okay, today we're going to have this meeting and we're talking about how our user interface is going to look in 3 years. Now, and that's what we are here for, you know. And if you agree, if you can, or if you disagree, as Robert says, you know, let us know.
Absolutely.
It's not about, this is not like the single truth, right? So, and in your meeting, if that is taking place today, maybe, then, you know, maybe one of you is going to say, oh, the guys were talking about, and then you're going to have your own discussion. And, oh, the guys are crazy. That's impossible. Or
exactly.
Whatever. But let us know. Yeah. I'm very much looking forward to it. But step by step, one by one, first one, as you said, in addition to our podcasts, is going to be the Industrial AI Conference with Hannover Messe in
2 weeks,
Frankfurt. So that's the first one I really much look forward to.
My highlight is always when we meet there, our listeners, yeah? And they say, oh, yeah, I listened to the podcast since 3 years and it's nice to meet you. And always a fruitful discussion. And yeah, that's interesting to meet new listeners there. That is my highlight when we talk about events, yeah? What else do you have?
I took my cell phone just before, and there was this quote from Sam Altman. So it's not there anymore. I was going to say, because there's two more things, of course. One more thing is about more learning, less data. You know, we don't have data anymore. What does that mean? And then that brought me, of course, to Sepp. And Sepp talked about the three phases of AI. You know, for those of you that haven't heard, go to our final podcast of the year 24, where you, Robert, talk with Zap. So that's one thing very much looking forward to, you know, is and what is XLSTM going to do? Oh, you, Zap, NXAI build up this great momentum. And I'm very much looking forward to hearing from you, from NXAI, what that means, you know, seeing maybe the first projects, seeing the first results. And then there was, of course, there's this reasoning thing. And that's what I was going to, you know, reasoning. And here, who's saying, somebody else was saying that we have achieved AGI, somebody else says. Now what? And that was the quote I was saying, maybe this person was referring to Sam here as well. And I think certain people are saying, you know, we've come to a point where why should we wait? I recall that we were talking about singularity. Who's the guy who came up with singularity? And he said it was going to be 2045. So we stay with these numbers in the year 2045. Yeah, that's what he said, right? What's his name? He's the guy who invented the synthesizer, right? Ex-Google as well. Now, there you go. But it's not as far. But then AGI as a concept of danger of, you know, this artificial intelligence taking over the world. But it feels at the moment, at least there's one stream of people and there's always the other stream. And not in a negative sense. That's very, very important.
Greetings to Gary.
Oh, yeah. And I've been following Gary for a long, long time. Have you?
Yeah. I'm still following Gary. Yeah.
I stopped at some point in time. But that is not to say that I don't want to listen to people with certain opinions. Maybe that's sometimes the case when it becomes too much. But that's people do what they do with Peter as well. If Peter is
Leave your bubble, people.
Ah, yeah. We need to be very, very careful of that. Where there was a thing on computer aided design, and why are people talking about computer aided design suddenly? And one of the answers was, which I liked, and I happened to be in there because I started computer aided architecture design, is like, oh, it's just your bubble. And oh, we all need to be very, very careful with that. And then, of course, we could move on and talk about what is AI doing to politics. There are so many things changing. Trump is going to be the president again of the United States. We have elections in Germany, and we always know, but I don't think we should or should be talking about that.
No, no politics.
No, we don't do that. But then the reasoning, the AGI, so there's one stream, and I think that's what Sam was saying, and it's not about Sam, but also Anthropic. That's what Ethan Mollick, that's his, maybe look at Ethan in LinkedIn, and he say that's what the Anthropic CEO, Anthropic, of course, former OpenAI, has said something similar. Yeah, we've come so far, and you could almost say like that what the large language models are capable of. But again, saying that, I do hear the other people saying that's not possible because they're just large language models. I say yes, but in combination with additional, let's say, algorithmic approaches, we come to a point where we can definitely increase our productivity.
Yeah, absolutely. What else do you have?
There's two more. Time series.
Yeah.
The final one that I saw was not positive. It's okay. Like we've been looking at time series all the time, you know, looking back to my time that I was active. It was always time series. We did nothing else at that time than looking at time series. Now, this paper, that's from folks from the universities of Virginia and Washington. And they say our large language models are actually useful for time series forecasting, quote unquote. Our claim is simple but profound. Popular LLM-based time series forecasters perform the same or worse than basic LLM-free ablations, yet required an order of magnitude. So they say not. That's one. And that's how I got it actually into the XLSTM, because I think at some point in time, there was at least a thought that maybe XLSTM could do that as well.
Yeah.
But besides from that, I think we're going to be talking a lot about agents this year. Looking forward to have your opinion, your view, dear listener.
So you have one more news, because I spoke to Max Welling, and we will record an episode with Max and talk about Cusp AI. Did you read your email?
I saw that. Yeah, Max says he is going to be available maybe in March, I think, February, March.
He's in California, yeah, and he wants to find new material with AI. I'm really looking forward to record an episode with him, and he will explain it to us. Last news, Peter, and then we move to the main part.
Yeah, I don't have one. Agents.
Okay. Oh, agents.
Yeah, that's not news. I know. No, I don't have another one.
So let's move to the main part. I did an interview with the CTO of SICK, Neil Schassen. We talk about Gen AI for sure. Then we talk about how to bridge between this functional safety community and the AI community. And yeah, it's a very nice episode with Niels. Thanks a lot. And I'm really looking forward to your feedback, dear listeners. Peter, it was a pleasure. Thank you very much. All the best for the coming year. I'm really looking forward to produce a lot of episodes, to meet at a lot of events. And yeah, it will be a good year.
Looking forward to be working with you another year, Robert. And please let us have your feedback, dear listener. Let us know what it is that you want to have more of, what you want to have less of.
Exactly.
What it is that we can do for you. And a great year to all of you.
It's going to be a good year, we hope for.
In the year 2025.
Bye-bye.
Okay, I'll stop. Bye.
My name is Robert Weber, and in front of me is standing Niels Schassen, CTO of SICK. Niels, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, good morning, Robert.
Finally, we made it to record an episode with SICK. I remember Tim Fisher wrote me an email, I think 3, 4, 5, 6 months ago during his parental leave. And he said, oh, you must come to SICK. We have so much when it comes to AI. We want to show you. And finally, we are here and we are recording an episode. Niels, before we start, please introduce yourself briefly to the listeners. 3 sentences.
Yeah, I'm Niels. I'm a CTO of SICK. So my responsibility is to make sure that we create innovative solutions for our customers, innovative sensor intelligence solutions. And my background is physics. I did a PhD in physics, in quantum physics.
Quantum physics, oh, that's the next big thing, right?
Yeah, maybe. So we did some experiments also.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But right now it's more on AI, the big thing, right? So I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
How to make money out of AI, Niels?
Ah, that's the big question everyone
that's
is.
$1 million question at the beginning.
Exactly, yeah. So I think right now the AI is it's a big word, right? So AI has become so broad and everything is AI by now. So let's try to sort this a bit. So I think there's basically two main directions. One, of course, is the big hype around generative AI, mm-hmm. which is being boosted during the recent years.
Aren't you interested in Gen AI?
Yeah, we are. Okay. And then we have the more classical machine learning approach, deep learning approaches, which are around for a longer time, I would say. And for this deep learning approach, we use them already now in our products. So we, for example, have cameras where detect certain patterns in, for example, quality control application in industry, in manufacturing processes, for example. And in this camera, we have AI included, deep learning, I would call it. And this is fantastic to see what you can do with it.
Can you sell this?
Yes, yes. And we sell the cameras. Mm-hmm. You can also add AI functionality. And by that, you're able to really solve your application much more easy with much higher performance. And it's fantastic to see how easy it is to solve, for example, quality control applications.
From my point of view, when I talk to researchers or to different guys in the industry, in the AI industry, let's call it like this, they say, oh yeah, vision, everybody is focused on vision and stuff like that, but vision will become commodity. Please do not invest anymore in vision because this is commodity and it will be commodity. I think we are nearly there that vision will be commodity. So why do you see there still a business potential?
I think there's a big difference to having any vision solution to having a robust industrial vision solutions. And making it really robust and reliable also in operation, in maintenance, that's the key. Yeah? And that's what we want to offer to our customers. And we see that our customers are highly interested in having these really robust solutions.
So you are not focused on the vision model, more to combine sick industrial grade hardware to combine with a, let's say, state-of-the-art vision model, adapt the state-of-the-art vision model, and then combine it with the hardware with a classical SICK approach.
Yes, exactly. So it's about industrial hardware, robust, reliable, high quality, combined with, I call it, industrial grade AI software solutions on top. And the combination is key.
What is it? Industrial-grade AI solution from a software point of view. What needs to be done?
So at the end, what is AI? AI is a technology which is based on probabilistics. So this means there's also, when you use it, false detections, for example. And you want to minimize these false detection, of course. And the key is to really have the right AI model for the application you're trying to solve. For example, we have high-performance cameras which are installed in large installations where you have to sort parcels, for example. Yeah? Now it's Christmas time, everyone is sending parcels, they have to be sorted, you want to receive them on time. And there's these big logistics providers, and they use, for example, our cameras, camera systems, so it's multiple cameras, with AI models on top to identify barcodes, to dimension the parcels, to waiting and so on, on a really high pace. And this must be robust, right? And if there's 40,000 parcels coming in per hour, if you don't have robust AI models and you do the wrong sorting based on the AI models, this is really expensive. So the key is really to make it robust and also get the 99.995 reliability on that. And that's the key. And for that, you need really specific AI models based on the applications. You can't take general models which you can...
You adapt general models.
Yes.
To your use cases.
And we also have developed own models, okay, own neural networks, which we use. And this is a core knowledge to make it really the link to the application.
How do you scout technologies?
So at SICK, I think innovation is in our DNA ever since the beginning when the company was founded. So there's a kind of a natural tendency to be curious about new things. And of course, we have also clear responsibilities in our business units, also in our global R&D department to do technology scouting. And we use connections to universities. We are trying to find partners in ecosystems, startups. So we use everything to scout for technologies to find really what is what we need for our sensor solutions.
You mentioned Gen AI is a topic for you. So that's a new, I would call this good old-fashioned AI. Yeah, and now we have this Gen AI topic. What is so fascinating when it comes to Gen AI? And can you please share an idea where Gen AI plays a crucial role when it comes to SICK in product or maybe also in-house? But please not a ChatGPT for SICK or something like that.
No, I don't think that there's a super big business value in this, and it's a quite a horizontal approach.
Yeah.
I think you have to think really vertical in terms of what's the applications you want to solve and what's the right approach to that. So generative AI, we have some ideas how to use this in our products.
For example?
Yeah, for example, I just mentioned the example of the parcel sorting. And then sometimes you have lost parcels or lost baggage in the airport, right? Really annoying. And then the airline is trying to find it. It would be great to have just an interface, maybe a voice interface saying, please show me all bags which are blue with a certain size. And then you are much quicker to identify your lost baggage, right? So here you combine generative AI, voice recognition, image detection technologies, a lot of generative AI models together, and suddenly have a much easier solution for the customer, in this case, for the finding your lost baggage.
What else?
So, and then there's many more ideas. However, it's really about where's the big business value behind that.
Maybe to provide companions when it comes to safety.
So, exactly. Then, of course, we also have products for functional safety. So, to really reliably detect a situation and make manufacturing processes safe, protect people, and so on. And also here, I think the combination of AI and safety is something which...
Ooh, that's complicated, right?
This is super complicated. But there's so much innovation potential in here. Whether it's generative AI, I mean, no. Maybe the next step. But I would say step by step, right?
So I can see the safety engineers when you say, we do something with Gen AI. Oh, yes.
So I think generative AI right now has a lot of good use cases in, for example, doing product engineering, product design, in combination with virtualization also. You can really nice product design simulations. We have many internal use cases. So when now during the last 2 years, when this rapid acceleration of Gen AI technologies came up, we have founded a kind of a community internally of SICK, and they've identified now more than 60 use cases. And what we do is we test these ideas by combining a model, an LLM, for example, and the use case, and trying to figure out whether it's feasible from a technology point of view, and also whether there's enough business value behind it. And we have some applications which we have scaled already. I mean, you can also buy some solution like Copilot for software development. This is super efficient. Almost all of our software engineers are using that now and gaining really...
So you're using a Siemens Copilot or is it a different approach?
We use a GitHub Copilot for now for software development.
Oh, that's a tough one, right? GitHub Copilot. We had an episode with Markus Malmström, CTO of Sandvik. He also explained using GitHub and said... That's when it comes to copyright licensing, stuff like that. It could be difficult.
Yeah, it depends what you want to do. I mean, there's so many internal tasks where you have to write scripts for doing testing or so, and I think this is less of an issue. But whenever you bring it out towards the customers, then you have to check, of course, the copyright. You have to figure out whether there's a bias in these models and figure out whether they are reliable and so on. So there's a different quality gate you have to implement. But even for the internal use cases, there's so much productivity increase which we use. For training generation, it's so easy to create trainings now with the right tools, right? You can translate it in no time into all the languages you need without much effort. So this means you can diffuse the knowledge to certain topics in your company much, much quicker. So this is use cases we are scaling. And then there's use cases where we try to figure out where's the real value behind that. And it's kind of an innovation process for process innovation, I would call it, where we suddenly are able to rethink our internal processes and gain a lot of productivity in here.
You mentioned scaling. From my point of view, we come to an end of scaling. Always bigger models, always faster models, always more data, 140 billion parameters, et cetera, et cetera. You're going scaling. The bitter lesson of scaling. From my point of view, now it's time to adapt these technologies in a broader perspective to the industrial sector. And then we need to think, because we will see problems that we are not able to solve everything with Gen AI, LLMs, good old-fashioned AI. So do you think scaling comes to an end?
So let me try to answer this question maybe from a different perspective. So when we use AI in our products, it's a sensor and has a certain computing power. So in the sensor, we don't use the super large models, right? That's so we are really interested in the smaller ones, which are really good in solving single applications. And we believe that the smaller models are so powerful now. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can run models on your PC, you can run models on an embedded sensor software and hardware. And that's key. So we can really bring the intelligence onto the sensor with the right models. And this is not the large LLMs the super large vision models. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if you have a really challenging applications where you solve them on the edge by streaming different cameras to an edge device, where you need much more compute or even cloud to train models to do the inference, for example.
But everything depends on inference, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then of course, you need larger models. Also, you can use standard models. Meta, for example, has the Segment Anything model, which are really powerful in general sense. However, if you apply them to specific applications, you have to put a bit more intelligence from yourself into that. Mm-hmm. And that's what I mean.
We need to think again what we can do. Not scaling is not the future. Scale. Yeah.
I believe that in the future, we see much more efficient models coming up, which require less compute, which require less power also at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's important.
I mean, just look how much power consumption is needed for the large models.
Yeah.
And I think there's going to be a trend that they become, in general, more efficient here. And I think the second trend is that we are going to see much more specialized models for certain applications, also in industry. Mm-hmm. So I believe we're going to see in a few years, or maybe even a month, I don't know, the speed is super fast, specific models for solving specific applications.
You mentioned AI and safety, complicated relationship. How to bridge the gap between both worlds?
Yes, that's a very nice innovation challenge, right? So what is safety? Safety is, you need reliability. You have to prove that you use the right engineering process to create the products. You have to take into account all the errors and failures which could happen during operation. You have to make sure that you always have a safe state of your sensor to be able to protect people at the end. So this is quite a deterministic approach. Very structured. It's the V model approach. It takes 70% of the time for documentation and so on. And then if you look at AI, it's a probabilistic approach. So you can feel the tension, right?
So
how to combine both? And we have one example of a product which we launched last year already. For example, if you have the big rollers on the street, which are used to really build roads, and there's a really dangerous process. You see the workers there driving the rollers. You see the cars passing by next. You see workers standing next to it, 10, 15 centimeters distance only. Just imagine someone's not paying attention. What happens then? That's super dangerous. And there's no safety measures.
There's a domain-specific knowledge to handle that.
Exactly. Yeah. There's experience. And so what we did is we offer a safe brake assist. So this is a laser scanner combined with a machine learning intelligence. And together, this sensor is able to detect the distance to a next obstacle. And the important part is, of course, the persons. It doesn't matter if there's a pylon lying there, right? So there's not should drive on and making the road flat. But there's so many events happening, like there's fog sometimes. There's steam coming out from the asphalt. So and then you have to be able to make the product such that the roller is not stopping when there is steam, right? And this was a big challenge here to solve. And for that, our teams used machine learning to train when we have steam. And now we have a solution which is also certified to a certain safety level. It's built into the big roller machines. at one of our customers already. He even won a prize for that. That's super good.
Congrats.
You can buy it, right?
And you can sell it.
And we can sell it. That's a win-win situation. Yeah. And we make this use case much safer. And
isn't that the rocket science to detect people on the street next to a roller?
I mean, they're standard models, yeah. You can just use, but it's again about reliability. Yeah, that's the industrial grade we want to achieve. And this last, don't know, 10% maybe, this is key, and that's what we want to drive forward. And that's why we have also right now this Beyond Safety Forum, how to advance the whole area of AI and safety, because we believe there's so much productivity potential in manufacturing applications and in also logistics applications.
I'm not a safety specialist, right? But how about to predict safety issues? So you collect a lot of data in factories, in processes, in the PLC, and you have root cause analysis in the machines and stuff like that. Is it possible to predict safety issues? Because from my point of view, safety issues happens when a robot stops and there's a problem and then somebody comes in and then it's not problem, it's going, the robot. Is there a possibility to predict things like that?
Yeah, now we are moving into a super interesting part, because suddenly with all the technology which is available now on the edge or in the manufacturing systems, in the IT and OT areas of a company, and you somehow fill in all the signals from your sensors, then suddenly you can look for patterns, right? That's what you're referring to. You can also look for patterns which will then maybe for situations which are safety relevant. So just imagine you would be able to know where all your assets are, like people moving, where are they exactly in the manufacturing floor, the shop floor, all the carts running around, and whatever else there is. So if you're able to know where they are and you analyze that with AI, for example, you can see the patterns, and you can also then react and say,
it's always this problem, this situation. We have always a safety issue with Thomas running this way.
Exactly.
Why, Thomas? What do you do on this way?
And then you can do the analysis on the data. Yeah. And that's super valuable. And you can make your shop floor much more safe. You can also issue warnings to people if they are stepping too close to something. Yeah. And that's much more dynamic than what we have so far. And there's so much potential also for companies and customers with all the data which we provide with different sensors to analyze their processes, and they can optimize their processes. And the combination of process optimization and safety, we call it dynamic safety, this is a fantastic field, and there's so much potential from our point of view.
So you were working on these topics?
Yes, we do.
But what is so complicated? Because I think it's from a business perspective, it's easy to explain the customer what you want to do, and it's easy to understand that there's a business value for him and a cost value.
The hard part about this is
data.
Now, we have the safety approach is I would call it the traditional safety approach is something which is well described, well regulated also. Yeah, and if you fulfill the regulations, you know that your product is basically safe. Yeah, and now AI comes with high speed, right? And the regulation and the design and engineering approaches are not yet there. So we need innovation in how to innovate in the engineering processes. And I mentioned the V model before. That's a classical process, and that's what's been used in safety, designing safety solutions. On the other hand, in software development, you have this DevOps circle, right? Moving super fast. You have so many.
We need this too, safety DevOps.
Yes, exactly. So it would be safety DevOps. So how to combine both of them? that's the key. And so we need beyond technology. We have the technologies for models and AI models now. We have traditional safety approaches. Now it's about doing process innovation, how to engineer these novel safety solutions. In addition, we are now able to also adjust the speed of carts moving around on a shop floor based on if there's people or not.
Exactly.
So suddenly in operations, you also can adjust the safety requirements.
Exactly.
And this is not possible yet with the regulation and standards we have. So it's super important to also advance the processes and regulation to allow for safe and dynamic safety solutions.
On one end, we have the regulation, but safety is not regulation, right? So from a customer point of view, yes, we have this regulation, we need to do safety. But when we have a safety issue, the machine stops and you can't produce a product. So maybe it's not always the discussion, okay, we want to fulfill the regulation. Maybe we don't want to have a safety issue.
So the main part is to have a productive shop floor, yeah, a productive, efficient production line. The other part is not to harm people. And this combination is what counts. But to show that you have the right products which are reliable enough to prevent people being injured, for example, you follow certain processes and certain regulations. And once you follow that...
But this is crystal clear.
This is what we have. However, AI was not included yet. Yes. So now it's about figuring out the right combination of AI and this proven and traditional approaches of safety. And that's what I meant by regulation. So we have to advance the standards also, so that when following a new standard, including same AI, you can prove also that this is still a safe solution which protects people. That's the thinking behind that.
At the end, how do you organize AI in your company? That's a tough one at the end.
Yeah, it's, I like it. So we have two dimensions. One is, as I mentioned earlier, also the product and solution orientation. So how to bring AI in our products. And looking back, we started this in 2018 with deep learning approaches, figuring out what's the real models you need to, in this case for the cameras, for example, to put into our camera in the future. So this was a small team. It was called an internal corporate startup, which was separated from the traditional business units. And they had the task to advance the machine learning, deep learning, so that we one day would be able to use it in the cameras. And there were people from different parts of the company brought together. So they were not completely disconnected from the rest. They were somehow not still integrated, but had a clear task to advance that. And now we are in a good situation that we have a kind of a platform being created, which is can be easily used in all of our cameras, no matter whether 2D and color and black and white and 3D and so on. It's there because we started early and now it's been used and it's super good. It scales also nicely. So that's the part for the products and solutions. And we have many product launches every year, and in most of them we have AI in. On the other hand, so the generative part, which is the newer one, I would call it. So we have a team, a community of people with some owners, and they have the task to collect all the different ideas and use cases across the whole company. So whenever there's someone has an idea, he or she should put it into the marketplace, describe the solution. And then as a second part, we have a team who's able to provide the technology for that. You know, do we use open source for that? Do we use a model from one of the large suppliers? So we have a technology base. And then the idea is in a small team to test whether the use case, the idea is working, providing business value. If yes, we invest more money and try to pilot it. If it works, we scale it. So it's a really like an innovation process, like an innovation funnel process for the generative AI and the internal use cases. And that's super interesting because suddenly all the process owners for all the internal processes are becoming innovators, using generative AI or AI to optimize the processes. And it's fantastic to see what's happening there. For example, just last week, we have seen a blog post from one of the teams, and they, within a few hours, they implemented a simple use case where they checked invoices on whether the VAT was the correct one, right? They checked it and they figured out, in some cases, we paid too much VAT. So there was some generative AI model scanning and helping. And so we saved money within less effort, a couple of €100,000. So that's fantastic to see all these use cases. And you need a kind of a mixture between a decentral approach, in our case, and a central team who provides technology. And it's fantastic to see how this moves on. And I'm pretty sure we see many more use cases being implemented.
What do you wish for when it comes to AI?
This is a good question.
Combining real-world physics and AI. Simulation is a big topic, but that's not your main focus, but you studied physics, so maybe that's interesting for you personally.
So I think AI is here to stay, right? Yeah. So and now we have to learn how to use it. And I think the only way to figure this out is to do some experiments yourself.
Yeah, and how to establish a pipeline to a customer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So my wish would be that everyone is testing and experimenting with that to get a feeling what's really behind that. Because in the news, there's so many different opinions on that. And sometimes also we see polarization on that topic. Huh? So I think there's value behind that, but not for everything. And the only way to figure this out is to use it in a responsible way, to figure out where's the real business value behind that. And if everyone would do this, I think we would move forward in a very good way. And of course, there's certain topics which we really need to regulate on AI. Here in Europe, with the AI Act, for example, I think there's parts in it which really protect the European values. And I think that's super important because there is some bias in these models.
But we are doing a single source strategy, right, in Europe when it comes to large language models. Isn't that, from your point of view, you are CTO of a big company, single source strategy is a no-go?
Yeah, so what? where to get the right technology? So we see that in, I would say, three parts of the world, we have Europe, we have Asia, and we have US, there's different approaches to that. I think in Europe, we have a kind of a high-quality approach, strong regulation. Mm-hmm. And if we count the money which is put into AI in Europe, it's less than in Asia and less than in the US. Yeah, and somehow we need more investments into AI. I think we see now with a couple of startups and more money being available for startups, we have good steps and also some large companies investing a lot and some foundations also investing a lot in that. I think that's a good step. In the US, we see a super high pace. We see huge investments and they are so large, no research agency in Europe can cope with that anymore.
But they don't like regulation.
Yeah. No regulation, and there's certain bias in these models, right? So and then you have to be careful how to use that. We have to learn how to use it. However, from a technology point of view, that's the best technology you can get. So we should use it in a responsible way and also understand where's the limit of certain models. Then Asia, we see also super high speed, also regulation here.
Regulation is growing fast in Asia, right? Yeah. We heard yesterday a presentation by Bosch that Asia is peak regulating everything. Yeah,
but still, there's it's an interesting combination. A lot of regulation. But in addition, we see this, called sometimes Asian speed, Chinese speed, for example.
Chinese speed in regulation.
And also, there's an open source-based approach, right?
Absolutely.
So big models like DeepSeek, the performance is fantastic. So also on the open source part, there's a strong movement. Also, some US companies are making their models open source. So I think with this dynamics, there's a good competition on technology. And it's important to figure out what to use. And there's many options. And I think we should not be too dogmatic about that. We should respect certain aspects of copyrights, which has to be clarified somehow. Yes, we have to respect ethical aspects and bias. And of course, data protection is a topic. However, I think we can manage that. And if you really want to drive that forward, you find ways how to manage that. And that would be also my wish, that we become entrepreneurial, test things, see how we create business well with that, and move ahead. Have some courage to do some experiments with that.
Neil, thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Robert.